crops are all in and the peaches are rotten. The oranges piled up in their creosote dumps. They're flying you back to the Mexican border to pay all your money to wait back again. And my father's own father waded that river. They took all the money he made in his life. My brothers and sisters came working the fruit trees, and they rode that truck till they took down and died. Yes, goodbye to my one goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mis amigos, Jesus, Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane. All they will call you will be deported. Some of us are illegal, some are not wanted. Our work contract's out and we have to move on. 600 miles to the Mexican border. They chase us like outlaws, like rustlers, like thieves. And we died in your hills, and we died in your deserts. We died in your valleys, we died on your plains. We died beneath your trees, and we died in your bushes. Both sides of the river, we died just the same.
Good evening. It is just a little after 6 p.m. Here on, and you're listening to WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. That was Deep Poor Tea, cover by Annie DeFranco, from the Woody Guthrie at 100 Live at the Kennedy Center album. It is February 2nd, 2026. My name is Ben. This is the program Where We Are At. I am live in the studio. Just to let you know, reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. Let's see, we'll just kind of dive right into one of the things I did, events that happened a few days ago. Hundreds of university and Urbana High School students protested against the what's been going on with the Immigrants Custom Enforcement, also or Department of Homeland Security, also known as ICE, Federal Immigrant Operations. Over 1,000, well, according to this piece by on IPM News, over 1,000 students at the University of Illinois Urbana High School walked out of their classes on Friday as part of a nationwide protest against the Trump administration's aggressive immigration crackdown. The protest took place amid growing pressure to rein in enforcement activities after federal agents in Minneapolis fatally shot Americans Alex Preti and Renee Macklin Good. Several businesses in town were also closed or reduced operations to take part in the movement, encouraging people to avoid shopping, working, or attending classes on Green Street in Urbana. More than 1,000 people braved below freezing temperatures below freezing temperatures to gather near the U of I alma mater. Protesters cut off traffic for 3 blocks as time as they march down Green Street from right to First Street. And I have some audio of that rally from this past Saturday.
We're out here today because there's masked militias terrorizing our streets. because ICE is kidnapping and deporting our neighbors. And we're here. Shame. And we're here because we're ready to put a stop to this terror.
Right.
How many folks here knew what a general strike was a year ago? Okay, that's actually pretty good. How many folks thought a general strike was possible a month ago? Less people. I like you though. Revolutionary optimism. How many people thought a nationwide shutdown was possible just a mere week ago? We're an optimistic crowd. That's great. That's how we win. But after seeing what happened today, thousands of students walking out of class, hundreds of middle schoolers walking out of class, high schoolers leaving, workers walking off the job, businesses shutting down. After seeing all that, how many people here today now know that a national general strike is inevitable? Feel the power that we have together when we come together as working people. The power to make society run. The power to shut society down and build it anew. The power to put an end to ICE terror. And don't you ever let anyone make you forget that fact, that when people get organized, there is nothing that can stop us. Now, this isn't just another protest. It's not just another National Day of Action, another one-day boycott, something like that, where we just go home and things continue on the same. No, my friends, today is a resurrection of our most powerful tactic as working people. And a resurrection of our fighting spirit across the country. The general strike is a tactic whose time has come. And by participating in this resurrection, we have all transformed ourselves. How many people invited a friend? How many people talked to a coworker today about this? Canvassed a business?
Yes!
Walked out of work? Walked out of school? Walked out of class?
Yes!
Did something that you've never done before?
Yes!
That's organizing, and that's people power, and that's how we are going to win. The ruling class, our enemies, the billionaires, they all thought that this was dead, that the tactic of the general strike was confined to the dustbin of history. They thought that this was impossible. They thought that the American people were too divided, too scared, too disorganized to stand up like this. Trump believed he could pick our communities up, our cities, one by one by one, with ICE terror tactics as he rolled out a police state. But today, we have risen as one across the country to prove him wrong. And we will not be pacified by the Trump administration changing the names or the faces of the ghouls leading this campaign of terror. We will not be pacified by the Democrats who cut deals to fund ICE with lies on their lips and smiles on their faces while they stab us in the back. And we will not be pacified or confused by this bogus continuing resolution that kicks the can on ICE funding and puts it back on the table 2 weeks from today. See, the ruling class wants to delay and switch up the names and the faces to pacify us and to distract us. But whether it's Homan or Bovino kidnapping our neighbors, the struggle is going to continue. Because the only way for this movement to stop is for them to stop. The only way for this movement to stop is for them to abolish ICE, to grant equal rights, and end mass deportations. The general strike has been unleashed into popular consciousness once more. And you all have unleashed it to gather this day with people all across the country.
Yes.
And I don't think I'll be forgetting about this tactic or this power that we have as working people when we come together anytime soon. Will you?
No.
So if they try and send ICE into another city, what do we say? We are ready for a fight. Rise up,
General Strike!
We are ready for a fight. Rise up, General Strike!
And if they try and deport our neighbors, what will we say?
Rise up, General Strike!
We are ready for a fight. Rise up,
General Strike!
We are ready for a fight.
Rise up, General Strike!
And if the ruling class ever forgets, even for a split second, this deep truth that we are reminding them of today, that they need us more than we need them, what will we say?
We are ready for a fight. Rise up, General Strike! We are ready for a fight. Rise up, General Strike! We are ready for a fight. Rise up, General Strike!
Awesome. I want to say thank you to everyone coming out to express solidarity and to come to share grief over the explicit murder and state-sponsored terrorist action against Renee Good, the 37-year-old legal observer killed by ICE thugs in Minneapolis at approximately 9:30 this morning.
Shame!
Shame!
ICE has already made the statement that she is a domestic terrorist that threatened bodily harm against ICE agents, but once again,
shame!
And of course, this is not the first murder, but of course, earlier in Franklin Park, the Hispanic man himself was murdered by ICE and in the very similar conditions where they said they were under threat by a person's vehicle. But the reality is, and all the footage shows, these people were trying to leave to avoid harm and persecution. And ICE sees that as the threat. An attack on their power is seen as a threat, and so they had to murder them. And today, she was shot 4 times in the head. So, this is both a celebration of life, a time to grieve and a time to express some rage and protest. And we need to keep fighting. Because right now, unfortunately, a lot of what they're doing, it is about control. It's about obedience. And we cannot obey.
No!
Right.
We must not obey.
No.
A woman reached out to me today. I don't know if you know. My name's Bill Walham. I'm running for Congress, but I'm not here to talk about that today. So, a woman reached out to me today, and she asked me what we would do if there was no election. And I said, we would keep organizing, and we would fight back in any way we can.
Yes!
That is true today, and that is true every day. Because we don't know if there will be an election. We don't, and honestly, we know that everyone in power, both Democrat and Republican, is failing us right now. So that's here what we're gonna stop. And so I just want to say thank you to everyone who's come out today, and let's just keep being here for each other, whatever it takes.
Yes.
Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and not necessarily represent those of WFT Champaign Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WFT associates. And again, that piece that I read a little bit, that was from IPM News, was written about the hundreds, if not possibly a thousand, both university and high school protests against ICE. That was published January 31st. That was by Emily Hayes and Arjun Thakkar, published on January 31st. So thank you to them for that, having that article. Please stand by. I have some public service announcements that I will also play for you now, here from us at WEFT Radio 90.1 FM.
Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Elliott Counseling Group, who offers compassionate mental health care to individuals of all ages. Elliott Counseling Group serves Central Illinois with in-person and online sessions. More information is available at ElliottCounselingGroup.com. That's ELLIOTT Counseling Group, no punctuation or spaces, .com, or by phone at 217-398-3900. 9066.
Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Minuteman Press. Whether you need signs for an event, thousands of full-color flyers, or personalized promotional items, Minuteman Press can make it happen in time and on budget. They offer an extensive line of products as well as design services. Minuteman Press may be reached online at cuprinting.com, by calling 217-355-0500, or in person at their new location in the Shops of Knollwood Shopping Center at 2131 South Neal Street.
And just to let you know, voting for the in the Illinois primary starts fairly soon. In fact, I believe the Illinois primary is March 17th. So things like U.S. Senate, U.S. House, state Senate seats, state House, school boards, and other municipal governments will be on the ballot. One of those important races here for us in Champaign-Urbana will be the U.S. Congressional 13th primary. As you just heard, one of those candidates on the ballot who I've also interviewed was Dylan Blaha, who's running for the Democratic primary for Illinois 13th Congressional District, along with the going up against the incumbent Nikki Budzinski. And if you are interested in registering to vote, if you're not, you can go to the Champaign County Clerk website if you would like, champaigncountyclerk.com, to find out all about voting, if you know many ways to vote, election data, candidate and elected official information. You can also go to, and it's also, there's also where to vote. I believe early voting starts February 5th. So that is Thursday, February early voting starts Thursday. And I believe the Illinois primary will be March 17th. So that'd be Tuesday, March 17th. And the primary election early voting locations is also on the Champaign County Clerk website. Again, that's champaigncountyclerk.com. Another great website resource is the League of Women Voters Champaign County. They have a Champaign County candidate guide, also a number of information about candidates that are running, issues, registering to vote, election resources, events, video of events and forums, all very useful information. That's the League of Women Voters Champaign County. Their website is, that if you would like to go to, is lwvchampaigncounty.org. And just to let you know, the League of Women Voters of Champaign County is a non-partisan grassroots organization that encourages informed and active participation in government by providing voter education and increased understanding of major public policy issues. And that's essentially all I have on kind of that type of news and politics. Just kind of another public service announcement. Do you have an old car, truck, motorcycle, or boat that you would like to get rid of? Donate any old vehicle to charitable adult rides and services and designate WEFT to receive the proceeds from your gift. All you need is a clear title. Charitable adult rides and services will pick it up and haul away with no charge to you. Make arrangements on the website at careasy.com or call 855-500-RIDE. That's 855-500-7433. Remember to tell them that you want WFT to receive the proceeds. I'm going to get ready my next... my. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and don't necessarily represent those of WEFT, Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. So what you're about to hear is I believe it's Breakthrough News.
Breakthrough.
Welcome to Breakthrough Radio, the best of breakthrough news brought to you for 1 hour each week. I'm Sean Blackman. Now to our first story.
Hundreds of thousands marched and millions participated in a nationwide shutdown against ICE. No work, no school, no shopping. Welcome to the Socialist Program. I'm John Preisner, a producer of this show. Our hosts Brian and Leanne recorded this episode at noon Eastern Time.
1 week ago, there was a general strike in Minneapolis against ICE terror. The following morning, ICE agents executed ICU nurse Alex Preddy. They wanted to intimidate this new mass movement, but that has failed. Today, January 30th, this mass action has spread throughout the country in what has been labeled a national shutdown. No work, no school, no shopping. For the first time in a long time, maybe the first time ever, the concept of a nationwide general strike has become a topic for tens of millions of people all over the United States.
We need a new system. We need a new society. We need to demand that which may have sounded impossible even a few weeks ago, but is not only realizable, but an imperative necessity.
I'm Leanne Sima Fullahan here with Brian Becker, and this is In the News, a segment of the Socialist Program.
Leanne, I think that when the government, the Trump administration, the ICE officials saw this massive turnout in Minneapolis on January 23rd, more than 100,000 people came out in spite of the fact that the high temperature that day was something like 9 below zero. When they saw that, they were alarmed. They knew that the Trump administration's program of terror against not only immigrant communities, but urban areas all over the United States, that that was going to fail. And so the next day, Alex Preddy and others were confronted by ICE agents, and they executed him. They shot him in the back. And then Kristi Noem and Bovino and all of the other ICE officials immediately said he was a domestic terrorist, that he intended to inflict great damage on ICE agents, that he came to assassinate people. I think that's what Stephen Miller said. And they were really hoping that the tide of opposition, of resistance, would be sort of stymied as a consequence of this show of violence. And I think it did impact some people. You know, some people who had been part of the January 23rd demonstration, some of the nonprofit organizations said, well, let's take a breather. Let's take a time out. You know, we don't want to go too far too fast. Maybe it's not the time for an intensified struggle. But there were other people, including the students, the young people in the Somali community, in particular in Minneapolis. And there's a very large concentration of Somali Americans in that part of the country. They said, no, we're not going to be intimidated. We have to step it up. In fact, they called for the whole country to stand with Minneapolis and stand against ICE terror. And that's what's happened. And for the first couple of days, nobody knew whether January 30th would take off, but it has taken off. And taken off so much that Trump actually has recalled Bovino, sent Tom Homan back to Minnesota to talk to Governor Walz, trying to de-escalate, trying to say, this is going to be a new day, let's talk. All of this kind of, you know, kind of a sense of detente or relaxation. That was the new message of the Trump administration in the face of the pending, looming general strike. But that didn't work either, Liam. people all over the country, and hundreds of actions are going into the streets. Millions of people are not shopping. Large numbers of high school students are walking out. Trade unions, a large number of unions in a very short time, and it's not easy for unions to quickly make decisions. There's a process that they each have. They, large number of them have endorsed or are promoting. A number of celebrities and influencers also answered the call. I mean, it's been a remarkable past few days.
It certainly has, Brian. It's really taken off. And just to give our listeners a sense of just how broad and how wide this call for action has been spreading, some of the celebrities that have made the call are pretty major figures. We have Jenna Ortega. We have Ariana Grande. She has one of the biggest social media platforms in the world. Billie Eilish. They've all posted for people to join the national shutdown today on Friday, January 30th. Others are Pedro Pascal, Mark Ruffalo, Macklemore, Hannah Einbender, who really was one of the people who's been using her platform consistently to talk about issues, social justice issues to her audience. Ellen DeGeneres, Tim Robinson, Megan Stalter, Edward Norton, Tom Morello, the list goes on. And then Brian, in terms of other kinds of organizations and endorsements, there's a long and still growing list of unions also, and union locals and workers associations that are either mobilizing their workers, endorsing the call, promoting the call, that are saying this is the right thing to do right now. I can't read for everyone the whole list because it's so long, but I can give a few examples of it. We've got UAW Region 6, which is a huge region. It's all of the West Coast UAW locals. It's tens of thousands of workers. There is the North Texas Area Labor Federation. They represent over 400,000 families. There's the Inland Empire Labor Council. They represent over 400,000 families. There's North Texas Area Labor Federation. There is many student worker unions, MIT Graduate Student Work Union, for example, many others, United Electrical Worker Locals from all across the country, Alphabet Worker Unions, United Food and Commercial Workers Union. I could go on and on. It's hard to estimate how many workers this collection of union locals and worker federations represents, but it's upwards of 850,000 workers at least. Then there's hundreds of organizational endorsements of local organizations, community organizations, left organizations, artist organizations, teacher student organizations, other kinds of national organizations. Hundreds of organizations have signed onto the call. And that's not to mention all the everyday people who have been mobilizing for this. You can't open your social media anymore without finding basically every post is someone saying, hey guys, I'm not going to go to work today, or I'm not going to buy anything today, or I'm going to the protest near me. There's 350 at least actions planned all across the country. In almost every state, I believe, we're still getting all the information because it's so much information. It's really, really incredible to see how this unified national action has taken root among everyday people from all walks of life. Restaurants are closing down. They're saying, hey, it hurts our profits, but this is the right thing to do. We're going to also open our doors for people if they want to warm up. We're still in really cold, cold temperatures in many sections of the country. Use our cardboard boxes from all of our shipments to make your signs. I mean, the solidarity, the outpouring of solidarity from the people all across this country is absolutely monumental.
Yeah. And I want to mention the tactic of the general strike. As we've said on the show before, a general strike is not that unusual in Europe, let's say in France or Spain. You know, workers know, because there's a long tradition of socialism and Marxism and left unions, either communist-led unions or social democratic left unions, that workers have the power in society if they withhold their labor. And of course, if they withhold their labor, nothing moves. If the bosses, as it's often said, don't come to work, if they don't get out of bed, nobody really notices. But if the workers don't come to work, everybody notices, because the workers' work, the workers' labor, is the thing that makes society move. So if the railroad workers don't come, there's no trains. If the sanitation workers come, there's no garbage pickup. you know, you can just go down the list. Labor, socialized labor, and labor is socialized in contemporary capitalism, makes everything move. Now, normally workers are in a state of competition with each other. When you want to get a job, you're competing with 100 other people who have filed a job application. Workers are in competition with each other. Workers are also worried about getting laid off. So you kind of want to perform well for the boss. I mean, there's a lot of stimulus or incentive to sort of just kind of get a job and keep the job and get your wages and be able to feed you and your family. But then there are times when labor cooperates. There are times when labor comes together, and when labor strikes, when labor withholds its labor, then everybody knows what the real power is in society once that power is mobilized. Now, there's another thing about a general strike that's extremely important. And the American bourgeoisie, the U.S. ruling class, being very class conscious, is more aware of this than the working class, more aware of this than the unions. They're more aware of the vulnerability of their own system. Here's what I'm talking about. If a general strike lasts more than a day, now we've had Minneapolis January 23rd, today January 30th, the topic of general strike is going to increasingly be on the, you know, the minds of a lot of people, and I think it's going to lead to a protracted general strike in the country. I think that is indeed what's coming, even though it's never happened before. When workers go on strike for more than a day or two, there's a question that gets raised. What workers should stay on the job? Meaning, like, if you're going to go on strike for a week, how are people going to get food? How are the sick going to be tended to? How would fires be dealt with, you know, if firefighters are on strike? What about sanitation pickup? Then the question becomes, for a general strike, not only who stays out of work, but who goes to work. And the General Strike Executive Committee decides, in order to meet the needs of society at the time of the general strike, this section of workers should work, and this section of workers should work. In other words, a decision is made. Keep the hospitals open. Keep the fire stations open. Keep the sanitation workers on the job. That's their role in the general strike. So it's not just about shutting it down, so to speak, but also what stays open. But in that process, something called dual power shows itself. And dual power is something that happens in all radical processes of transformation. Dual power is when there is a second power other than the government that shows itself and shows that it has authority. Right now, it's only the bosses and the government, the bosses and the state that have all the authority. The government's basic ultimate authority is that it has the legal right to use violence against the rest of society. But if another authority, a dual power authority, arises and says, all the workers are going to go on strike except these workers who we insist should go to work because they will make the strike be able to keep going because it meets the basic needs of people while the strike is happening, that means workers are now starting to listen to the new authority, the second authority, the dual authority, and that authority is the working class itself. That shows the class cleavage in society and raises class consciousness. This is what the bourgeoisie fears most. It's not about this or that. It's not about a particular economic or social demand. If the working class in the United States becomes genuinely class conscious and aware of its power and does so through an experience like a general strike, all of politics in the United States will change. Instead of the United States being kind of an anti-communist, more or less conservative country, it will become a very radical country, and that will happen right away. So what we see happening step by step in the last few months is that confronting the Trump administration's assault against democratic rights, against immigrant families, against the Black community, against gay people, against trans kids, against all of the things that people have fought for, social and economic and cultural reforms, in the face of that, people are organizing. And the logic now is leading to the general strike. So January 30th is going to be a step forward from January 23rd because it will be national. Does that mean everybody will go on strike? Of course not. Does that mean everybody won't shop? Of course not. but it means we're moving in the direction of a general strike. And you can't get to a general strike, especially in the United States, where there hasn't been one, or at least not since 1877 on a nationwide basis during the Great Rail Strike. It can't happen except through people having their own experience, but then having organizations, socialist organizations in particular, unions in particular, student organizations in particular, who help guide this process.
That's absolutely right. And it just shows, Brian, for people who are feeling like this, it might not be the right time, or they're nervous about it, or maybe we're not sure what to do. How exactly do we do it? The point is that we all have to participate. We have to participate in every way that we possibly can, because the moment is now. People are in the streets now. People are calling for action now. Now is when the people are rising up. So we've said it many times on this show, and we're going to keep saying it. We want to be with the people as they take action. We want to be with the masses of people as they take action. So today is just another step forward, as you said, and it's the beginning of a larger mass movement. And it shows just how unpopular the racist, xenophobic, violent actions and agenda that the Trump administration and the far right in this country represent, how unpopular they are with the masses of people in the United States, with the population of people in the United States. All of this talk about how people really, they just actually are nervous about immigration, or they really are, they're not happy about the wave of immigration. All of this kind of propaganda that has preceded the Trump administration, and that also is infused in the way the Democratic Party characterizes themselves and their decisions, all of that is untrue. You can see it for yourself with the outrage against the attacks on our immigrant neighbors and co-workers.
And Leanne, you and I have been doing some research on the statistics about how popular opinion or public opinion has shifted over the past months in regards to immigration, in regards to how people perceive ICE. You know, in the beginning, Trump said, oh, we're only going to get the worst of the worst. We're going to just get the hardened criminals. We're going to keep Americans safe. You know, like all of this BS. But when you look at the statistics, what's happening in the streets with this mass opposition, including the general strike, and it's not just in Minneapolis. And by the way, and I want to talk about this before we leave today, ICE is now moving to Springfield to target the Haitian community. That's going to be the next real big battle zone. But looking at the statistics, there's been a remarkable and fast-paced change in public opinion, and the polls show it. It's not just in the streets.
Yeah, let's look at the numbers. And of course, these polls are always a bit skewed. It depends on the question that is asked. But looking at the polls, this is a Harvard Harris poll from March 2025. So Trump had been in office for about 2 months at that time. And it said the result of this poll was that Trump's most popular policy was, quote, deporting immigrants who are here illegally and have committed crimes. That had the support of 80% of voters, including 72% of Democrats. The next most popular Trump policy was Trump's efforts to, quote, close the border with added security that discourage illegal crossings. And that got 74% of voters' support. Fast forward to now, there's a new Gallup poll from this month that says the percentage of Americans who want less immigration has dropped by nearly half. It's now 30% of respondents, and 79% of respondents say that immigration benefits the United States. So I think there's two things at play here. One is that the question that was asked in the beginning, and it's always been asked to voters, is do you want criminals to be in the United States? And that's the way it's been framed, that immigrants are criminals, and do you want criminals? So now people are seeing who Trump is actually targeting. Here's another great number that really shows the drama of the past year. There has been a 2,500% surge in non-criminal detainees. The vast majority of people that the Trump administration is attacking are people with absolutely no criminal record. The people who do have a criminal record are usually people with small misdemeanors, traffic violations, or even the fact that they came into the country without authorization. The number of detainees who are detained by ICE, the number of immigrants who are detained by ICE, has gone from 945 people to 24,644 people People don't want that. And in fact, when it comes down to it, when they see the results of the attack on the immigrant community, the vast majority of people in the United States say that immigration benefits the country, doesn't hurt it. The idea that the people don't want immigration is clearly completely false.
And Trump's attack against immigration is a very thinly veiled attack against people of color. The attack against DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, is a very thinly veiled attack against Black people in particular. So what Trump has tried to do, the whole point of this, is to use, I would say, a sort of racial superiority, racial supremacy, white supremacy, very, very, very thinly veiled, almost not veiled at all, almost completely openly. When Stephen Miller and the other Trump administration officials talk, and when Trump talks, he talks about global South countries in the most despicable way. And Elon Musk, his whole rant about how white men are the victims of racial discrimination, and, you know, the Equal Opportunity Commission, EEOC, which was established during the civil rights era to handle job discrimination. The secretary of that, I think it's, is it Andrea Lucas? She's making the appeal to white men to come forward because they might receive, you know, relief, money from the government because they are the victims of racial discrimination. It's really semi-Nazi or Nazi-like propaganda. A lot of it's actually Nazi-like propaganda. And, you know, back in 2017, when the fascists, the open Nazi fascists demonstrated in Charlottesville, remember? And people were killed there. There was a huge amount of violence. And Trump said, well, there are fine people on both sides. That was in 2017. The slogan of the fascists was, they will not replace us. And they were Jews, Black people, Arab immigrants, South Asian immigrants, African immigrants, Latin American immigrants. They will not replace us, as if the United States was a white society and it's now been taken away from white people because of immigration or because of the empowerment in some small way of the Black community. I mean, you know, I did that class with the People's Forum the other day, and we looked up some of the statistics. You know, at the time of the American Revolution, at the start of it in 1776, the majority of people in some southern states were African-American people. So the idea that this is a white country, no. In 1900, the majority of the population in Mississippi, 58%, was African-American. In South Carolina, 58%. This is an openly racist program. It's not about keeping people safe. This whole idea that we're closing the borders or we're keeping, quote, illegal immigrants out, all of these are just code words for out-and-out racism. Anyway, people are reacting to that because the country doesn't want to go back to all of that. I want to just mention, Leanne, I think we have a couple of clips. Not only did a lot of artists come out, influencers, big time celebrities, the labor movement, student organizations. There are going to be student walkouts today all over the country. And in Georgia, for instance, they're trying to suppress the student walkouts. And that's where it's been a real epicenter of high school student walkouts against ICE. But as a consequence of all of this struggle, even the capitalist media or parts of it are giving coverage to the new movement. The New York Times had it on its front page. I saw Yahoo front page a little while ago.
Yeah, the New York Times didn't just report about it. It said how to find out about it. It had an article about the protest itself and what you need to know. This was a very favorable. We've been waiting for the New York Times to announce any of these protests. Now they have, they're actually encouraging people, in a sense, to go out.
And that's a real lesson for grassroots organizers. I mean, you can send the New York Times a press release a day. You can send them a press release until the cows come home, so to speak, and you might not get coverage. You probably won't get coverage. You can even have a demonstration of 100,000 people, and sometimes the New York Times won't give it any coverage. But this is a rising tide of struggle nationwide, and the idea of a general strike And even the New York Times, which I think most of the reporters at the New York Times are disgusted about what ICE is doing. Anyway, favorable coverage. There's some TV coverage. I think we have a couple of clips. One is from Detroit. One is from Los Angeles. I want to play them, Leanne. I think you have them, that show the kind of, I would say, basically favorable media coverage.
Yes. Here is a clip from KTLA Channel 5, which is Los Angeles. Just take a listen.
Hi, Glenn and Lou. Yeah, if you had plans to come to the Stronghold tomorrow and climb, you are not going to be able to. Usually, this place is filled with climbers, chalk, and ropes, but tomorrow, they're shutting their doors, and it's all thanks to that nationwide protest and to show their solidarity. I want to show you some video of this climbing gym. Now, gym owners here say the man who kept their facilities clean for more than 12 years was detained by federal agents over the weekend while walking in South LA. They want to keep his name private, but they say he was racially profiled, taken into custody, and then later deported. As a result, the gym announced it will close both locations tomorrow, joining a nationwide general strike, calling on people not to work, attend school, or to shop. Now, the strike, it's dubbed ICE Out, and it comes amid growing protests against federal enforcement nationwide following recent deadly encounters in Minnesota, as well as ongoing immigration raids all across the country.
Yeah, so that's Los Angeles. Here's another clip. I think it's Detroit, if I'm not mistaken. But this is emblematic of coverage all over the country.
Yeah, here's Detroit local Channel 4 giving actually a list of all of the shutdowns happening in the area.
The list is growing of people and places joining ICE Out. It's essentially a national shutdown. We are hearing that students from Rochester High School, for example, they're planning to do a walkout later this morning. And this African market in Detroit, it's also planning to join in the ICE Out demonstrations. Now, this is the result of a massive coalition of different groups uniting to call for an end to the immigration crackdown.
I mentioned earlier, Leanne, that Tom Homan was dispatched to Minneapolis. Bovino was taken out of there. They're changing the face of ICE. They're changing the personality. They're changing the tone somewhat. Not a big change, actually. Tom Homan is so right-wing. And Governor Walz is like, yes, thank you for coming. Thank you for talking. Thank you for listening to us. But also, I think being prepared to actually cooperate with ICE in Minnesota if they tone down some of the excesses. Like, that's what Walz and the Democratic Party are upset about, the excesses. Like, you know, executing citizens in cold blood on a Saturday morning like they did with Alex Pretty or Renee Good. And, you know, so many other people have been killed by ICE. Keith Porter in Los Angeles. I mean, I think 35 have died in ICE custody. I mean, it's quite a large number, but so the excesses, but the problem with ICE isn't simply the excesses. I mean, that's a problem, yes, obviously, executing somebody in cold blood. But the whole operation is based on lies. It's based on mythology. And also, it incentivizes, like the way the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 incentivized, people to go out and catch, I'm using the word catch with air quotes, undocumented people, or people who, quote, look like, again, close quote, that they might be undocumented, and send them to prisons and send them to all of these private prisons. The domestic immigration enforcement budget that was adopted in the Big Beautiful Bill allocated $170 billion for domestic immigration enforcement, including, of course, equipping ICE and other law enforcement agencies with huge amounts of new surveillance equipment so that they can spy on everyone. But also, all this is going to be contractually based arrangements with private for-profit prisons. And every time somebody makes an arrest and they send them to one of these for-profit prisons, the owner of the prison makes money and the person who catches the person makes money, because they're given a bonus. So it's not just the excesses, it's the whole system of ICE that, you know, people are calling for the abolition of ICE. I mean, we need to really abolish the capitalist state and all of the We need a new start with what law enforcement would look like in a new society, a society based on humane values, a socialist society. But, you know, the reason people are calling for the abolition of ICE, not simply trying to get rid of its excesses or worse features, is because the system is crafted in such a way to incentivize this kind of brutality.
Breakthrough.
We're going to take a quick break here on Breakthrough Radio, but we'll be right back. To Breakthrough Radio, the best of breakthrough news brought to you for 1 hour each week. I'm Sean Blackman.
And the Democrats, from Tim Walz to the Democrats sitting in Congress, are completely behind the times. Here's what they're doing right now. Walz, first of all, is happily meeting with Tom Homan. And he's saying that there's progress being made, as if we can't remember who Tom Homan is. Tom Homan is this fascistic, what they're calling the border czar. He's the architect of the family separation model. And he said, we need to separate families in order to de-incentivize immigration. It's like an actual, it's basically a torture technique. It's telling people, if you come here, you're going to lose your children, and showing people and doing it to people. He met with the Proud Boys and other hate groups. He's an extreme right, far right figure, and the architect of much of this outwards racism of the ICE operations. Anyway, Tim Walz is happily meeting with him, saying that we need a return to normalcy. Then the Democrats in Congress, they are currently blocking the spending bill that would give a huge, unprecedented amount to ICE and the Department of Homeland Security. They're not blocking it, though, because they want to stop these operations. As you said, they're really focusing on the excesses. They're not even saying really to defund or even lower the funding. What they're saying is add a few things. And here's what their main demands are. Their main demands are that ICE officers shouldn't use masks. They should identify themselves.
That's very radical.
So radical.
Like, yeah, you want like armed, you know, thugs running around the streets. Take their masks off. We demand they take the masks off.
So there's that. Then the other thing that they're saying is that they should use warrants for arrests. Okay. They're not saying don't do these arrests. They're saying use a warrant.
I mean, that's also sort of like the Fourth Amendment against search and seizure. That already exists as a constitutional provision.
It gets better, Brian. Then they're saying that the ICE agents should have an enforceable code of conduct so that they should be accountable when they violate rules. And what is the example for this that they're saying? Well, in their own words, they're saying that they have to follow the same rules that your local police department does. That's Tina Smith, a Democratic senator from New Mexico. And Chuck Schumer saying the same things.
That's so radical. So radical. Like, in the United States, the police are killing people on average 3 times a day. The number of people killed in 2024, Leanne, I think was maybe the highest on record.
It was, since the tracking began, 1,270 people in 2024 alone. And in terms of accountability, or so-called accountability, officers face criminal charges in less than 1% of the killings, and they are convicted in less than 0.3%. So where's the accountability?
0.3%. That's like almost no one. So, yeah, so the Democratic Party, in the face of this upsurge by the population against ICE terror, they're demanding that ICE treat the people of the United States the way police departments treat the people of the United States. Again, in 2024, that meant to kill 1,200 of them. That's not reform. That's not a, quote, guardrail. This is kind of like, this shows that the Democrats, this is the most important thing, everybody. The Democrats are not going to stop ICE terror. They did nothing for a year. As a matter of fact, and I know you've done some of the research, it was the Democratic votes that allowed ICE funding to go through. Now, the number of people still supporting ICE funding on the Democratic Party side has changed. I think 42 of them supported ICE funding when it came up last year, and I think the number now is 7 or something like that. So it shows there's been, you know, they're feeling the heat of the people, and a bunch of them are changing their position. But my point, the basic point, the core point, is if we really want a different way that all of this works, we can't rely on the Democrats, because they are a ruling class party and they are not that different from the Republicans. And as soon as Trump offers them an olive branch, like he's doing with Walz, they're like, yeah, we're willing to work with all of you. Just, you know, follow the rules. Be like the police department. Be like, well, let's say the Minneapolis Police Department. And, oh, yeah, they were the ones who killed George Floyd on May 25th, 2020, which, you know, ignited a nationwide rebellion.
We cannot be fooled by this posturing. And let's just remember, everyone, that Obama won the title Deporter in Chief. He deported, in his time in office, he deported over 2.5 million people. And his slogan was felons, not families. But who was he deporting? Who were the so-called felons? Lots of people without any criminal charges, and then people who were charged just for entering the country. That was their crime. Or, again, for a traffic stop. This is the kind of thing.
And when you think about how right-wing it is in America with the two ruling class parties, Obama did initiate the DACA program. I mean, that was after the young people, people in their teenage years, people in their early 20s, some people in their 30s actually as well, who had come to the United States when they were 2 years old, 3 years old. Their parents didn't have legal papers. They had grown up in the United States, gone to American schools. They were Americans. You know, they had never been to Korea or to El Salvador.
I'm going to end that right there. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker, not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. And that wraps it up here on where we're at. Thank you so much for listening to us here on 90.1 FM. And of course, you can stream us online at wft.org and listen to us on our app and leave on Google Play and Apple Store, the WEFT 90.1 FM app. But I'm going to play us out with some Nina Simone from her song Save Me from the album The Soul of Nina Simone. Thank you so much and have a good night.
Myself after the last romance that I wouldn't give it a second chance. They say if you seek you're sure to find, and I know how true that is, 'cause the closer I get to you, baby, yeah, you're driving me clean out of my mind. I say save me, somebody save me. Anybody save me, somebody save me. Those who love always get the most. We're crying together from coast to coast, 'cause love makes me cold and hurt sad. These tears of violence are justified. I'm begging you to save me. Hey Lord, somebody save me. Those who love always give the most. We're crying together from coast to coast. No, it's me cold and hurt inside. These tears of violence are justified. He never said he needed me.